Welcome back to another episode of the Social Distance Podcast. It's football fever in Australia. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Jonesy's pride in the Socceroos. We talk about tactics in cycling. What are some of the masterclass tactics that George and I have been involved in bike races in the past? Quite interesting, actually. Knee warmer injuries, Western United Football Club, Jonesy's new doco, getting your house keys locked inside. It's all on the show. Like, share, subscribe.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in the basketball chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment. I think we should.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
We're going to need to get some more qualified guests on the show, eh?
All hell broke loose in Federation Square last night.
Oh, mate.
3:30 in the morning.
Spew and I didn't go. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I should go down and see that. And then I got CBF at the last minute because it's 2 a.m. We're obviously talking about the World Cup and Federation Square is a big like open air where you can watch the game. And it was just mayhem. 8,000 people, flares. Because there's always the element where you go, fuck, if we get rolled and bad, like if we lose 4-0, it's just going to be like, oh, why did I bother? But shit, man, we won 1-0 and it's just absolute scenes. Australia's absolutely fizzing at the moment. I've dusted off the old 2014 Socceroos shirt. You can see George is up and about. It's all happening.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the potential for 8,000 Bogans if you did lose to then just turn on each other and turn into like a Woodstock 99 situation. I just feel that's a real Australian thing to do.
Well, it wasn't far off from Belgium.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. When Morocco beat Belgium the other day, was it in Brussels? I think it was. It just went nuts. Yeah. All the just riots, cars getting burnt, windows getting smashed.
What is the point of that though? Like burning a car when you get rolled. Like, what's that do?
I put that in the same bracket as the Catalan protesters, who were just like, obviously not all Catalan protesters, but the 19-year-olds that didn't actually give a shit about anything about politics and just wanted to burn rubbish bins. So they're like, right, we're going to go and fucking burn our own rubbish bins, realizing that they are then paying for those rubbish bins to be like, it's such an own goal, especially in football.
No one's ever changed policy going, listen, we were thinking about giving you independence and we were dead against it. But then we saw 80 rubbish bins got burnt. We thought, yep, okay.
Yeah.
We need to make a change. That was the deciding moment.
Well, we were shit at football until. Yeah, but we saw there was a good body count on the cars last night. And the boys have had a talk in the changing rooms. And we're really going to turn this around. Yeah. We're really going to go out there and start trying tomorrow because you smashed 15 shop windows.
Yeah. I had this conversation with someone once. I don't know if it was you, George, but I don't think it was. About, like, in New Zealand, obviously rugby is our biggest sport, you know. And to be fair, when the All Blacks are in the World Cup final or something, which doesn't always happen, it might not happen in the next one. But when it does happen, I would say 2/3 of our country tune into it on TV. Like, it's huge. But I feel like we kind of lack passion. Like, I reckon New Zealand is
Real missionary supporters.
Yeah, we're real missionary. We don't really have... Like, we all get on and say, All Blacks, and America's Cup, we do all these campaigns, buy your red socks, and Dave Dobbin writes some fucking punishing, wounding song that we have to listen through for decades afterwards. And the whole country gets behind it. But if we lose, it's kind of like,
But even when we win, like, look, think of our chance, right? Think of the all, like, I think it's because we have a real aging, supporters population. We look at, like, the All Blacks chant, right? It's just like, All Blacks. Like, do you want to suck the life out of it anymore? Like, me. Like, it's trying to create an atmosphere, and it's just like, that's the best I can come up with. Saying the name of the team very slowly, like droning on, like, sweet chant.
Gee, I listen to a song with like real low BPM and trying to get session done or something.
You're like, exactly.
But it's like football fans are passionate in both directions. Win or lose, okay, the riots are maybe a little bit too far, but the passion, you can see it. Like Australia, an underdog and like a small team that scraped their way into the World Cup, probably going to get knocked out against Argentina, but they've gone to the knockout rounds. And football is not huge in Australia, but it's big enough that the small people in Aussie who are real supporters go to Federation Square, lit off flares, thousands and thousands of people. Well, that wouldn't happen if we won the Rugby World Cup.
Nah, and I like give me a few like burnt cars, you know, as a risk versus reward situation. Give me a few burnt cars and chop windows over missionary position 50-year-olds. You know, like that's my, if I had to choose, I would sacrifice my car.
Well, the next thing from missionary is like no more love making. You know, you've got to spice it up. Like that's the next thing that happens. We stop supporting.
I always wondered, like with the flares, where do you get flares? Aren't they like fishing shops? Like if you're a young bloke in Adidas tracksuits and you go, yeah, just three flares, mate. And then he looks at you and like, oh, I had a pack of blue bait, like just to cover it.
You got an Aussie like Socceroo shirt on and a scarf wrapped around your neck. You're like, yeah, a couple of flares, mate.
Yeah, I was just going out in the bay.
I was in the supermarket the other day, and because it's getting cold here, and I can't really wear leg warmers at the moment because it's cold. But I've got like just like knee warmers, and leg warmers give me a little knee niggle, so I have to like. So I was like, oh, I need to come up with a better way instead of wearing leg warmers. So I went and bought some Vaseline. So I need some Vaseline. So I popped down Saturday afternoon, popped down, got a tub of Vaseline and a bottle of wine, and just went and checked out. And the lady just looked at me and goes, so just gave me like, looked at what I was wearing, rolled down the thing, just looked up at me and just looked back down. And she was like, that's 20 euros, thanks.
You buy one of those 2 euros.
I might as well got some Doms in there as well. Doms, lube and wine.
It's the knee warmer thing. I just want to like quickly go into that. This sounds ridiculous. And this is a trick for young players out there, for bike riders out there in the winter. It might be hard to believe, and it's evidence of how delicate professional bike riders are, but this is true, that when you start training again after the preseason, you've had a month off, so everything's kind of tightened up, and you're like a little bit, you're at a higher risk of injury at the start of your preseason because you're not quite as fit, you're not quite as conditioned. That's why you ease into it. It's not happened to just one. George has got a little niggle at the moment. It's happened to me. It's happened to multiple other people. When you wear leg warmers in that situation, because of the how tight they are, it can pull your knee a little bit out of a line, and you can get a knee niggle. It's hard to believe.
It's like a tracking thing. And I even remember thinking, oh, because I used to have years of knee trouble years ago, and I haven't had any knee trouble for 5-6 years. And I remember putting this knee warmer on because it was cold. And I was like, oh, it's pretty tight, but nah, it should be fine. And then by the end of the ride, I could just feel it. Like, I don't have a knee injury. I'm still training. Mm. But it's just pissing me off, you know. I just always feel something, start peeling more on my other leg. And I started talking around and people were like, ah, taken down by knee warmers. And like, knee warmers have a good palmaris, like a big body count from knee warmers. And then I started noticing that, like, I remember I watched a race. I think it was Victor Campenaerts riding around with his leg warmers on, but he had the knees cut out. And someone going like, oh, isn't it the whole point? Warm your knees. I was like, well, no, leg warmers, mate. Hmm. Change the pronoun. And it was like, the amount of people I've since who have gone, oh, you're not wearing, you know, because I've cut knee warmers in half. So I've just got like a little leg tube. And the amount of people that's gone, oh, knee warmer injury, yeah, had one of them a few years ago. And it's like, we can crash into a railing at 80k an hour and be like, well, shit, that was close. A few scrapes. Put a knee warmer on, 6 months out.
So, Jonesy, when you get going this winter on the bike, knee warmers.
Yeah, I'll try it.
Anyway, notes. back to the 8,000 bogans at Federation Square.
Mm. Yeah, well, mate, it's just absolute scenes. Like, but they were... The shit thing about Australia in general, the international sport, is the times. And you same with New Zealand. Like, the game started at 2 a.m. and that's right in the guts of what do I do? Do I have a sleep or stay all the way through and just be cooked for 3 or 4 days? I opted for the sleep, so I shut it down like, you know, 11:30. But then when I woke up, I was like in that deep sleep. So I was all disorientated. It took me about 20 minutes to get into it. But then when we scored, I was just like in fucking shock. Like, just, I haven't felt like that watching a sporting event in a long time where you're just like, hold on, hold on. And then when they fucking got the chocolates, I was just like spewing. because I was like, oh, no, social media is going to light up. Like, all the threads are going to start coming through of all the Bogans going ape shit. And it was, like, way bigger than what I thought. And I was just kicking myself. So I'm definitely going to go on Sunday and I'll shoot some vision for the potty. We'll just post it on socials. I'll do, like, an underground representative.
I watched you guys start up against the French and I got pretty excited about that. And then...
Oh, yeah. Then it just went to shit. And then... It's the old example. When a team qualifies, they put their B team in. So when they're going, oh, no, it's all good. All we need to do is draw and win, and we're through. And we're going, yeah, but hang on. What if Tunisia beats France? And they go, no, they won't. They won't beat them. And then they put 9 shipmen in, like their reserve, which is still fucking good players.
Mm.
And, of course, Tunisia wins. So then we're like, oh, no, now we have to win. We're fucked. And then pulls that goal out of the box. Lecky, fuck it, unbelievable.
I remember when the Kiwis were in the World Cup and we didn't lose a game.
Yeah. We drew every game.
We were the only unbeaten side. Eh? We nearly went through because we were 1-0 up against Italy and they scored in the 90th minute or something.
Yeah.
So what's the situation at the moment? Talk me through this, what's going on with FIFA, China, with fair play. I'm confused. Yeah.
So in the pool rounds, obviously you have to separate. At a certain point, you might have to separate a team or two teams because on the same point. So this nearly happened. It didn't happen in the end. But Mexico are up 2-0 against Saudi Arabia. And if they had won that game 2-0, they would have gone to the same points as... who did I say before the show?
Saudi Arabia.
No, as...
Poland.
Poland. They would have gone to the same points as Poland. So they would have both had 4 points each. And then it goes, okay, how do we separate them? Goal difference. They would have had the exact same goal difference, plus 2. Okay, how do you separate them then? Most yellow cards. Whoever has the most yellow cards in the pool rounds gets flicked. Imagine getting flicked from the World Cup because you had one more yellow card. And you know, in football, they fucking hand yellow cards out like candy.
Mm. Yeah.
Yellow card isn't even that's not even off. That's just like, nah, don't do it again kind of thing.
Mm. Well, you can do it again. Just don't do it two more times.
But there's not many sports where you can openly touch the referee as much as they do in soccer. Like, how many times do you see when they don't agree with the decision, they go up and they plead and they touch the ref and that? Mate, you do that in the NFL.
It's like this thing.
Yeah.
It's a real, like...
But again, like, I've never seen a player go up, touch and plead his case.
But it's more of a fondle. It's more of like a fondle sizing them up.
Yeah, I'll reverse the decision because that was a fucking good point you made. Yeah, overruled. It's never happened. Like,
no.
It brings it to me to like think of like the stupidest tie breaks in sport. Like cricket, for example, World Cup, T20 World Cup, just net run rate. Like, and then it starts influencing the games because people start thinking there's a real good chance we're going to be drawn here. So they need to get a huge net run rate up. But like in cycling, you have this stupid one where it's like, overall positions. So net position. So basically, like in Tour Down Under, it's always a real big one because there's normally like in traditional Tour Down Under, after corkscrew, pretty much everyone arrives together. One guy will get, so the first, second, third normally have a stage win to their name, and then Wollunga that would normally arrive in two groups, you know, Richie Port group, and then a group of about 8 of us all together. So you have to work out, like, either you need to go pick up an intermediate sprint or you need to have got a placing on a stage. So normally the first 5 are maybe separated by 1 or 2 seconds. And then from, like, 6th to 12th is often all the same time. And the only way they like, split them up or they rank them is, like, overall position. So every position from every stage added up and who's got the smallest total. But then you end up in this crazy situation where it's, like, you have GC guys trying to be top 30 in bunch sprints because they don't want to get like a 50th. So even though it makes zero difference to GC, you think, why the hell is this guy sprinting? He's trying to get his net run rate essentially down. So
a good example of that, which was the first time I kind of cottoned onto this rule, was when Simon Gerrans had the yellow jersey in Green Edge in 2012, was it, Jonesy? 2012?
Yeah.
13. And then Daryl Impey took it off Simon Gerrans. And they were on the exact same time. And then it was a bunch sprint, and Daryl Impey crossed the line in front of Giro by, you know, 5-10 places. So he got the yellow jersey, even though they finished on the exact same time. Like, yeah. I was like, how does that work? I thought it was just the winner, and then everybody was just, yeah, you got a stage place, obviously. But the time, because obviously GC's done on time, the time hasn't changed. But because he was in front of him, he got the yellow jersey. It took me ages to work that out.
Do you know one of the best tactical things I've seen, which I was the victim of, was in this
when you dropped that guy in that New Zealand race when he crashed.
Oh, when he crashed, yeah. Tactically, it was great. It was like, attack this guy when he crashed.
No, it was three actually episodes out of that now. That's
Can't good. Chase me on the ground, mate.
Yeah. Unwritten rules. The situation was, it was the last day down under, and it used to be a crit, and it was like I had an insurmountable lead in the, I think we were battling for like 10th. I was 10th in this. I think it was Ruben Guerrero, maybe it was 11th. And there's no way he could pass me on being higher in position unless I completely shat the bread and finished like, you know, 100th in the sprint. So what he did is he got up the road in this break, and no one would let the break stay away for, I've got this completely wrong. He had three guys up in the breakaway. So three guys were in the break, and they were going to take the bonus seconds. And he was in the bunch. And the three guys were going to go first, second, third on the intermediate sprint. So I didn't worry. Oh, the bonus seconds are gone. Don't need to worry about anyone sprinting for them. And then suddenly, like 300 meters before he had a teammate in that group of three. And about 300 meters before the intermediate sprint, he just takes off. And I'm thinking, what an idiot. Like, does he not know that the three guys are up the road and they're going to take the bonus sprints? Come around the corner just before the sprint line and see that his teammate has just pulled over. So there was only two guys up the road. And his teammate's just pulled over. So suddenly there's 1 second available. And his teammate's like faked a puncture or something. And I've just seen the guy on the side of the road, and it took me a second to compute to go, oh, fuck, that was the guy that was in the breakaway. And this guy just snaked the second, taking my top 10 off me.
You've got to pay that. That's brilliant chess.
I was furious, and I was impressed. I was like, who's that come from, the team car? Or, yeah.
The stop and wait tactic, it had like a real twilight period in cycling, eh? Like, remember the Vuelta, when we had Chavez was fourth on GC and he was like 45 seconds behind Contador, stage 20. And it was the greatest, mountaintop finish.
Greatest tactical stage I ever saw in my time at Green Edge.
Yeah.
Awesome. Stage 20 Vuelta, it's happened a lot, the stop tactic.
Yeah. And we lit it up at the bottom of this climb. It was like not really crosswinds, but it was enough to like make it really hard. I think it was kind of spinning a little bit, but it was super, super hard coming to this climb with like 40k to go.
This finished up colder rats this stage.
Yeah, 60k to go.
No, up colder, colder Yoss maybe or something.
Colder fucking hard.
Yeah,
colder fucking hard.
And you finished 10th overall that year, right? So Esteban attacked when it was really hard at the bottom of this climb, like 45k to go, and Contador was like, good luck, mate. You know, it was a group up the road, 15 guys up the road at like 5 minutes or something. So he was just in no man's land. But we had Damien Housen in the break, and we just made him stop. Like, he got off his bike and had a stretch. He was waiting at the top of the climb for like 4 or 5 minutes until Esteban came, and then just started riding again and just ripped it.
Well, there's a few dramas in there when Steve-O was going, did he stop? And he goes, nah, he's sort of riding slow. And he goes, I fucking asked him to stop. And I was in the car and I was shitting myself because Steve-O is like, that vein in his head was about to burst. And it got to the point where he couldn't even talk to Mac, who was in car too. He like handed me the radio. What the fuck, what do you want me to do? Talk to him. And so I just like, in my nicest voice, goes, yeah, Macca, can you please ask Damien to stop? Yeah, thanks, mate. Like, and oh, mate, it was fucking heated.
And then the best was then, like, because Steve had obviously said to Macca in the other car, that tell Damien to stop. So he's, you know, like, Chinese whispers, it's gone, like, wait, Damien, we need you to wait. So he's just riding really, really slow. And then he's like, has he stopped? No. I told him, I need him to fucking stop. So then, yeah. And then like,
Damo's doing like track stands, but he's still clipped in.
Is he clipped in?
Yeah. So then he gave the thing to Jonesy. He's like in there just recording backstage passing the car. He's like, yeah, Macca, just ask him to stop, mate, please. So then he's like, and then it comes on the radio like, okay, he stopped. He's waiting at the top of the climb. And then it's like, and then you're like, thanks, mate. And then like yeah. 5 minutes, then like 5 minutes later, Steve-O grabs the radio and goes, hey, Macca, sorry I lost my cool there, mate.
Yeah. Yes, sorry, things got a bit heated there, mate. Yeah, good on you, mate. Like, it's all good. But, mate, that turn, the Damo, so then obviously Damo stopped, but they've got to make up a minute and 30 to Contador. So, Damo, it's like, okay, you've had your little break. Fucking gas it, mate. And he absolutely railed it down the descent, pulled time. I think there was like 25, 30 seconds, pulled it to a minute 30. And then when Damo had to switch off, fuck, man, I thought he was going to drop dead. Like, I've never seen a guy more cooked than when he peeled off to let Esteban go. It was
incredible. When we came past him, he was just stopped on the side of the road. He wasn't even, he just gotten off the bike.
Yeah, he was, absolutely
like,
fried.
He just parked it on the side of the road. He was just sitting there. Like,
and then you had Yatesy trying to disrail the Saxo train, remember?
No, Yatesy played that, route. That was, this is why, like, tactically it was such a good stage. Like, Steve-O, the bike riders had a bit to do with it, but Steve-O really nailed it this day. So we had Simon Yates, who was fifth on GC, or sixth on GC, I think, and Talansky was fifth on GC, but they were really close. So then it got to the last climb, and Contador had no teammates left except Sergio Paulino. It might have been someone else.
Trofimov.
So he was just riding tempo on this climb to try to keep Esteban close, you know, or catch him or whatever. But all we had to do was get rid of Trofimov, and then Contador had no teammates. So Steve was just like, Yatesy, just start fucking attacking, mate, because Talansky's going to chase you because he doesn't want to lose fifth on GC. So on the TV, it looked like, what the hell is Green doing? Why is Simon Yates attacking when his teammates up the road are trying to get him onto third on the GC? But actually, it was the perfect tactic because Yatesy just attacked enough times that Talansky chased, and eventually Trofimov just went, boom, dropped out the ass, and then Contador had no teammates, and then Yatesy was just like, all right, no, I'm not attacking anymore. And then Contador had to do everything and they couldn't catch him.
I've got a question for you. They're all talking about, this is obviously back to the Socceroos because I'm very excited, but they're saying that the reason why they're performing like out of their skin is because of the chemistry above the shoulders. Like, this is on the paper, there's not a champion team, but it's a team of champions. No, the other way around. Champion team, but not a team of
breakfast
champions.
Breakfast of champions.
Yeah. And then you look at
it's
how
a breakfast
they...
of champignons. I had a... Wait, I'm just going to pause it there. A great joke I thought was great. Where, like, what do you call a plate of mushrooms at 9 a.m.?
Breakfast of champignons. Is that it?
Yeah, that's...
I'll pay that. What intrigued me is, does that same thing apply in cycling? Like in football, if you just get everyone to buy into this culture where it's like, yeah, no, you know, band of brothers and all that sort of stuff. In cycling, does it have the same effect? Like what happens above your shoulders?
I think so, because you've got to hurt for somebody else. And there's an element of like, all right, I'll do my job for this guy and I'll be a professional. And it also makes me look good doing a hard job. But if he's an absolute knob, because it's a bizarre... Here's the bizarre... I've lost my words this morning, mate.
You need a breakfast of champignons.
I need a breakfast of champignons. It's like a catch-22. So let's say you've got a guy... Let's put it in my situation, right? You've got a guy who's slightly better than you or is perceived as better than you or whatever, and is the leader and you're the last guy in the mountains. You're the domestique. And you ride for this guy and you do a great job and you help this guy, you elevate this guy's status by getting him a great result. I don't know, maybe you help him win a race, you help him get a podium in here or whatever. And what you're actually doing, the better job you do for this guy, although you're going, right, I'm proving myself as doing a good job here, you're also cementing the hierarchy. You're also going, this guy, by helping this guy, I'm therefore elevating him even further because he's doing a good job. He's gone, right, well, this guy won this race, so the next race, he's also going to be the leader. And you did a good job as a domestic. So what I mean is, like, you have to really, if you really like a guy and you go, oh, I don't care if this guy, you know, I'm elevating this guy, you'll be able to find an extra gear. You'll be able to find, go a bit deeper, as opposed to being like, this guy's an absolute knob, but I'm a professional cyclist, so I'll do my job. And you might think you've hurt yourself as much as you could, but if it's one of your boys, if it's like a guy you know, you die for out there, like Damo did for Esteban, you'll find another 5 minutes of pulling, or you'll find another 20 watts. You'll find something, you know, because it's like, if you desire for a result is worth so much more than just like, oh, I can handle this much pain.
Who's the best you saw it doing that, Bules, in terms of getting people to buy into, yeah, I'm going to rip a left nut for this guy?
I don't know who the best I saw. I think it was like, in Greenedge, in those, especially in those early years, it was like a real collective thing. It was kind of like,
Esteban had a good knack. He had a good knack at that.
Yeah. Well, he was lovable. You know, he is lovable, I should say.
Yeah.
And
what happened?
Yeah. He used to be a real lover.
He was. Yeah.
because he developed relationships with people when he was genuine, and he looked after his own, you know? And all the leaders that I've had in Greenedge, the Yates boys were the same, Gera was the same. Like all of those guys, they looked after their own. So they wanted to win, but they were genuine and they looked after their own and they made you feel.
But I think that's cycling now, isn't it, though? Like, I mean, essentially, leaders are good guys. It's been a long time since you've worked for an absolute asshole. I mean, you hear the stories of like people scream at their riders, and you hear the old Chippo stories of, you know, pouring bottles over people's heads and the hazing and all this shit. But I feel like maybe in the 80s, but
it's done.
I just feel like there's no room for assholes anymore, is there?
No. I guess Lance scared people. but no, I think, yeah, in Greenwich it was a real collective thing. Like everyone just understood. But also like the team, they built the team around, so people who were helping somebody get a result, regardless of whether they were capable of getting that result themselves or not, they felt comfortable to do that because you did that, you had a job, you know? Like you were never questioned. It wasn't like, oh, we need you, Damo, to win 3 races a year or you get to get fired. They said, no, you fucking did an awesome job. What we asked you to do, here's a job.
Mm. That's where I think you see successful teams, or at least really good environments, is when they really recognize the domestiques. So the domestiques are G'd up to do their job, and then they're like, right, I'm all in for this guy. Because they know it's like a safety thing. They go, if I do a good job, it doesn't matter how many races I win or results or whatever. If I just do my job really well and it's recognized, it builds such a better team environment. Whereas if you've got a team where they're like, right, we just need 5 guys in the top 10 to get points. And this is one of those things that we keep going back to, the points system that's so crooked. You end up just with this hostile, like, everybody trying to get a result, you kind of teammates your rivals, and it just becomes this mishmash of like
hostility
and agendas.
I heard the point system has scarred teams now, like moving forward, how they structure their season and stuff, where they go, there's no race now that they go, ah, yeah, we'll just send some guys there and fucking whatever.
Well, it doesn't exist.
It's like every race is points. Yeah. And no one wants to be at the end of 3 years in a position where they go, fuck, we're scrambling now. Chasing.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it has, I think it's just, yeah, it's just a system that's made people go, whoa, it's on the whole time. But until the system is reformed, which maybe it will be, then yeah, I'm sure.
They announce it next week.
Yeah.
They're going to announce next week the reforms.
Do you know what I want to say about domestiques, though? Do you know what's funny about domestiques? Just talking about how, like, okay, in Greenedge, you know, you did your job well. It was seen, you know, if you bought into the collective agreement and you did that, what was asked of you, like Damo, again, using him as an example of that stage in the Vuelta, you had job security. But the funny thing with domestiques is, like, if you're good at your job, with the exception of the teams like Ineos, Jumbo, where the domestiques are seen by every team and they're seen on TV because you're always on the front or you're always setting up a leader to win the race or something, if you're a domestique in a team that, of somebody who's finishing fifth in the Giro or fifth in the Tour, you're only really seen in your team, and you have that security in your team. But if for whatever reason that team stops, or that team doesn't give you a contract for some reason, it's very, very hard to go somewhere else, because you're only seen within your own environment. And you might be highly respected and loved and everything in your team. But if for whatever reason that team doesn't exist anymore, it's fucking hard to go somewhere else, because you're not seen. No one else sees that.
But is it like when you apply for another job at another business in everyday life, where you can have references? Like if, in your case, if you want to keep riding, like you list Happy, Durbo, and then the team rings them and they go, yeah, no, he's a fucking good rider.
I would say
you couldn't list like the team.
Nah, but I would say off the record, references happen in cycling.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, people ask me all the time, what do you think about this guy?
Yeah.
And how is your first reaction personality first or rider first? Like if he's a dickhead, but a good rider, it's always personality.
I would always
say... Well, they don't ring you to ask if he's a good rider, do they? They ring you to ask if he's a nice bloke.
What's the cutoff then? What's the bar that you go, I'll let that slide, but this, nah, he's put into the bell end category?
Well, if someone says to me, oh, hey, Sam, what do you think about George Bennett? And I responded, yeah, he's a good rider. They'll be like, oh, he's obviously a shit bloke.
Let's not take him.
You know?
That's actually how you do it. Like, on the bike, great. Yeah, man, he's great on the bike.
Yeah, talented.
And yeah, if you make that distinction, if you decide to make the distinction by going, yeah, he's great on the bike.
The worst is when you go like, oh, I don't really know him well enough to comment.
Yeah. I just say, oh, I'm the wrong guy to ask. Yeah. I just say, oh, I'm just not the right guy to ask about this one.
But the worst would be is if you teed off to a sports director and said, oh, don't pick him, he's a fucking unit. And then the next year you see he signed with the team.
That's happened twice in my career.
That's like when your best mate breaks up with his girlfriend that you hated, and you're like, oh, thank God, she was not good for you, mate. She's a fucking clown. And then like 6 weeks later, oh, we're back together. Oh.
I'm a shocker at that though, because I always choose. My counsel is always, oh, mate, if you're having trouble now, just shut it down, eh? Like I'm always giving it the shut down, and other people like believe in love. And you make it work. I've always just gone, nah, just it's not working now, man. Save yourself save yourself a lifetime of misery. Just shut it down now, eh? And inevitably they get back together and I'm just going, I mean, nothing personal. I was just trying to help you out. But
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, on the flip side, Bill was talking about absolute legends. You sent through a clip of this great man. Take us through.
Hollywood as well. Our non-sponsored writer. He's done an amazing job for the Social Distance podcast. Because
listen to this.
Well, there might be a podcast or two made about that performance. They are his sponsors after all. Socially distanced, of course.
I love Rob Hatch. He listens to the show. He often gives us plugs on Eurosport and GCN. And the beauty about that plug is that Ollie did all the work, you know? Yeah. And Rob said, we're his sponsors. Mate, Ollie's just put our logo on his chest out of the goodness of his heart. That's why he's put it on his chest next to his heart, because it's the goodness of his heart. And
I just still feel like this is off-brand for us. I just feel like if he really wanted to represent us, he needs to be flapping around the back, crashing, taking other people out with him. Yeah. I just feel like he's, you know, it's just a little bit not our kind of, you know. That's not what I signed up for. When you said, when they said, how do you feel like, Ollie's saying we could maybe put the logo on his shirt. He hasn't trained in a month. I was like, oh, that sounds like something we could be interested in. I know, natural talent, ripping it.
And as we do, over promise, under deliver. He's sort of under promised and over delivered. And he's won a couple of races now, and so he's sitting fifth overall going to the final weekend, which is two nights in London.
But how is he
so
not winning? Because he's won two.
Oh, because there's points the whole way down, so I guess someone, you know, collective points.
Someone had a group up the road and stopped for him.
Which is good. We don't want him winning, George. We want him sort of hanging off the back a bit.
Yeah, I'm just curious how you win two and end up at the ass.
But he's really taken, with Rob Hatch obviously giving the boys a shout-out, which we love from Rob every time he does it, Ollie's taken the marketing and promotion of the show into his own hands, and we respect that. I think we need to do something for him, because he is our non-sponsored rider. Like I say, he's just done out of the goodness of his heart. So well, maybe we have to buy him a round of golf. He loves his golf.
George will send him a signed jersey.
Leg warmers. Stand by, you can give him a couple of years, Ollie.
He can send me a signed jersey.
Yeah.
I just saw on that clip you played, it showed his power and his heart rate. It was, you know, he was over 200 beats a minute. Like,
that was mind, eh? I should quickly correct the fact that I said the opening weekend's coming up this weekend, so it's all to play for. But the time you hear the show, it would have already been done. We're pre-recording this.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. And you'll also know if Australia beat Argentina too.
Mm.
So everyone will be like, geez, Jonesy was up and about. They got done 7-0.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah. But the other big... the other big news is the Doco series, Bills, comes out Wednesday in Australia on 10 Play and then Paramount Plus. It's been a bloody 9-month project, but back in the sports Doco field. You seen the trailer, George?
No, I haven't.
So the best thing I reckon... Oh, I'll just play it.
Fuck, can I summarise this in 15 seconds, this journey? We've had every obstacle thrown at us.
And the wheels have just fallen off.
I think we needed to make a clean break.
Because I knew our head coach was.
He scores! Australia have done it!
As a coach, you can only control your environment. And my environment is mainly the players.
Get your heads up! We play like that again, we'll fucking beat any team.
Some moments in the season, they didn't really go how we wanted.
If I keep playing like this, I could be out of the team.
If unless you've been in dark places or struggling, it's difficult for us to judge.
I'd be in tears, basically, you know, a couple of times a week.
Western United dropped 2 more points. And how vital could that be?
At the moment, it's $5.4 million loss. And you think that's a big number? It is.
Western United? No, that's a whole lot of bullshit.
This is where we thrive. Backs up against the wall.
Oh, shut your mouth.
And the follow-up, Lustica.
I know you fucking lion, mate.
The ball to Priovic. So deadly. Oh, now.
You're fucking red, mate.
We can be the underdog. I don't give a shit. But we're not going to lay down to anyone. Pressure's on them.
The West has arrived.
To be unified throughout a whole season, it's nearly impossible.
That is extraordinary.
That's why only one team can win.
George Sprinic, he lays it off for Wales.
What do you reckon, Bennett?
Four. Chills, mate. My favourite part of that was the Australian guy going, Western United? Nah, that's bullshit, eh?
Oh, yeah. No, because
currently, it's a $5.4 million loss. And you think it's a big number? It is.
I love it when the people try and throw, like, pressures on them. Have you seen that thing? It's like, they're nervous. We're calm.
Yeah.
All Blacks.
Yeah, no, it was a cracker, mate, because like throughout the whole filming of it, like I come on, you know, they'd already shot 50 days of filming and the director they had, he got the boot or he left. And then I came in, they were on top of the ladder and I'm like, Jesus, like what's happened here? And oh, mate, it was just full on. And yeah,
so did you have to go and watch all this footage to try and work out? Like...
Yeah, so we're trying to catch up or get a snapshot of what they'd shot whilst the season was still rolling along, and then had to reset it. And it's like cycling, you know, when you guys are on the bus or for football players in their change rooms, that's like their sacred area. And they used to have like guys with big boom poles and audio stuff and, you know, camera crew leaving their gear lying around. And then we had to just come in and go, fucking hell, see, Bewley's on board. We had to go, mate, we're going to change how you're doing all of this and sort of win the trust of the team. And then we got it just before the finals, but... Mate, no
so
one
so
thought
open up to the camera crew a bit.
Yeah, yeah. Just so that they weren't like standoffish.
So basically, most of your content came from when, like, you didn't film anything. You were just in there going, right, we need this guy to do this.
No, I started filming as well. Yeah, I started filming sort of with, you know, 30 shoots to go. So I got back on the tools. Hadn't been on the tools in bloody 5 years.
But were you also like...
The Docos come out because I've always been a diehard Western United fan, but no one ever else supported them. So,
yeah,
glad that you made a doc about them.
But
Did you like try and like talk to the guys? Were you the guy that's like, all right, mate, how do you like, will you be the guy that would get them to open up, or is there someone asking them questions or?
So the way you do it is you just shoot it raw, like, and then at the end of it, when you work out the questions you want to ask, you get them in a studio and then frame up the questions that'll fit the scenes that you want. But a lot of the time you have to say, yeah, take us in the moment. That's it.
Go to the Phoenix.
Wellington Phoenix, fuck off. But it's not going to be available if anyone is outside of Australia. It's going to be available in Australia first, and then we'll get it international, so we'll keep you posted. But yeah, it's just good to be back in the mix. And it was harder than bloody All For One, the doco idea, because it's 6 48-minute episodes. So it was like three times the amount of work that we did with the doco. But yeah, we got there in the end. So
how are you dealing with the so publicity? Are you ready for that? You couldn't make this show earlier because you were doing a big TV stunt. Or were you? What were you doing? You were on the project.
TV. He was watching TV.
Oh, I was watching TV.
He was in a big TV stand in front of
I was sat in front of the TV and watched.
Oh, I thought you were like, I've got to go on TV, or I've got to go on the project.
No, to watch the guy, the coach, Aloisi, he's like an Australian football legend. He was on the project and he pumped up the series at the end. So I was like, man, I'm not starting this show without watching that. But it was the first segment, so it was sweet. We'll keep you posted. And as soon as it's ready, international, we'll let you know.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to be a cracker.
I had a little incident to finish the show last night. So I'm heading off to training camps. Well, Hannah and I both go to respective training camps today.
Oh, so you're still with Hannah after last week?
That's a good point. Thanks for the five star ratings and the reviews we got after our plea for help.
Yeah.
And one of them was a concerned listener making sure that Hannah and I were still together. We are going strong like always.
Sweet.
But so we're heading off for a couple of 10 days or something. So we went out for dinner last night and we were meeting some friends. And it was my fault and it was a bit late. I was like, shit. So a bit flustered. And we had like 5 rubbish bags. We're taking the recycling out and stuff. And closed the door, walked to the restaurant. And like, just as I walked into the restaurant, I was like, I don't have a key. And this was like 8:45 at night. And Hannah's like, fuck, I haven't got a key either. I was like, oh. And I just like kind of just for like 5 minutes ago, I was just pissed off, you know? Like it was both of our fault. Like it was shared accountability. But I was like, this is annoying now. Like
you both left your house without a key.
Yeah.
I do that only when I know Caitlin's with me. So I've only ever done it like 3 times. And every time it's been when Caitlin's been at home because I'm like more relaxed. So I don't even, you know what I mean? Like, but otherwise I do the whole like got the key because I know what a ball like this is going to be if I don't have it.
Before I close the door, Hannah goes, said to me, she goes, oh, I've got nothing. I've only got my wallet. But I assumed.
Well, then it's your fault.
And your key. You know, like, I've got nothing.
Well, what else
like,
is she going to have?
You take Beach your key. Ball. Like, if you leave your house, you go like, oh, I've got nothing. But you have your key.
I think that's it's your fault, Bills.
But she was like.
I think she told you she didn't have the key.
Yeah, that's her telling you.
Yeah.
That's going, I've got my wallet. I've got nothing else.
Yeah, none of this shared accountability bullshit. It's on you, bro. She told you.
All right, I messed up.
So what did you do?
But I fixed it.
How?
You know, no point. So I went to the restaurant and I just called a locksmith at the restaurant and just organized. And they said, we're at a restaurant 5 minutes from home. Just call me when you're there and I'll sprint over. So then like just before the steak came, he called me and I sprinted home and he let me in and cost me €115 and I went back to dinner.
That's good. That's good wicket for a locksmith that just picks a lock and then just goes 115.
It was funny when I called him. He was like, oh, it's a little bit more because it's after hours. So the prices, hang on, let me just have a look. I'll let you know what the price is. I was like, mate, it doesn't matter what the price is. I've got to get it.
You can name any number right now. Yeah. I've got to go.
I said, whatever. Like, it's cheaper than a hotel room. And I'll pay for a hotel room and then I still got to get a locksmith the next day. So like, I'll just pay you, mate.
I once did it once where I left the key on the, when I was paranoid, I'd lock the door from the inside and then with a separate set of keys, I'd left and I went to come back in and I couldn't even get the key in the door. And I was like, fuck. So I called a locksmith and he arrived and he goes, oh, I need you to turn around. I was like, why? So you just have to turn around. Well, that was a bit weird. So I turned around and went straight away, open. Mm. I went, fuck, what did he do? You know, so he's obviously got something that's like, either is like, I don't want to show you this because you're going to go break into everybody's houses, or you're going to realize that what I've just done and charged you 150 euros for is not worth 150 euros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what they do, just because.
Did he make turn around last night?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
It must be like the magic trick of the locksmiths. They don't want to disclose what it is, because next time you get locked out, you'll be able to do it and you don't need to pay him 115. I think that's more the point.
Yeah, if we've got any locksmiths out there, what are we...
Yeah, tell us.
And before anybody says, like, you just put like a hard card, credit card in and push the...
Oh, I can open them.
Yeah, yeah. You can do that on a lot of doors, but these old apartment, European apartment doors, it's not that simple. It's not a straight in. It's like...
Yeah,
it's all
yeah.
sorts.
They might just have a little. They might just have a little crook, because in Andorra, I just opened my old Andorra house with a with a credit card, which is actually your Andorra house. So
I've done it. So I had the keys on the. I did the same. I had the keys on the inside, and I couldn't get
on the inside.
I was like, "Fuck,
it's so shit, eh?"
Yeah.
Credit card, oomfa.
Before we go, Bills, I noticed you've got the service course jumper because you're trying to get the branding in. There's been a few times you pulled away from the mic. And then you've done these ones just to sneakily get the...
It's not purpose marketing. It's not. I literally just put this jersey on because it's quite comfortable around the home in the winter jersey. And I've just got... I'm just stretching. I've been stretching.
Well, so I thought they've just launched one in UAE, haven't they?
Yeah, Wolfies. Yeah, I was just there.
Let's not make the show spot. About... Let's not plug too many things in the show.
Yeah, all right.
We've already plugged Ollie. We've already plugged the doco.
Plugged the doco service course. And Socceroos. Any locksmith that gives us the secret on how to get into like a lock, we'll plug your business next week. Next day. Yeah. All right, that's enough. Right, four's good. All right.
Yeah.
Good show.
Okay.
All right. Good. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll we're gonna have a team meeting for the listeners out there about what we do for the summer break, whether we have a Christmas breather for a few weeks.
Or yeah, I reckon,
we're going to have a meeting, but we'll let you all know.
And you're putting pressure on Merry Christmas. Merch discount or something, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm working on a discount for the merch, for both hats, my hat, Jones's hat, and the t-shirt. So hopefully we'll have that sorted just after Christmas, so you can get it for next Christmas. Maybe Boxing Day sale on the merch.
Run out sale.
You're such a consumer. You didn't shut down the shop on Black Friday?
No.
Sure.
Keep leaving the reviews as well. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. See you soon.
Guys.